Gordon Dundas, how are you doing this? Again, mate, every time we start, I apologise for where have we been? Where has the podcast been?
I know. Well, I mean, it's a little less frequent, a little more infrequent. We're just all very busy.
I know.
So we apologise. We are trying to keep them regular, but with Gordon travelling and then me travelling and doing the day job, it's quite hard, isn't it,
yes,
sir?
Exactly. What we need to do is give this podcast prunes. We need to keep it regular. That's what it needs.
That is what we need. Yep. Prunes and figs.
Gordon, every time we start with a little bit of whiskey news, we're recording this April 2024.
Well done.
Yep, that's right. I'll get confused. You weren't there this year, but I was having a wee look, and we had a Keepers of the Quaigh had their spring banquet.
They did, yes.
And I saw, you know, our illustrious leader, Leonard Russell.
Yes.
Was there. Gordon, for those that don't know, you've been several times.
Uh-huh.
What's it like? I've never been once. Thank you very much.
Ah, it's an amazing evening. So just to give people, if you don't know what Keepers of the Quaigh is, it's an industry sort of society, for want of a better word,
yes.
That you get welcomed into as a result of your work in the Scottish whisky industry. Ultimately, I think it was initially aimed more at the sales and marketing of Scotch whisky. But if you've done your shift in Scotch, as it were, then, you know, to be welcomed into the Keepers of the Quaigh is something that's very, very amazing to be done. And the way that it happens is there's two banquets, one in April, one in October. And every intake, there's about 50 or so new keepers, something like that. And some are made into masters of the Quaigh. And that's really just a way of saying, well, good on you type thing. You're well done on being a keeper.
At Blair Athol Castle, no less.
It is at Blair Athol Castle, Blair Castle. And it's an incredible, you know, there's an army there, there's military. It's really quite an amazing evening. And, you know, some of the pictures and some of the pomp and ceremony that goes around with it, far less the great dinner and guests that they have. And, oh, of course, there's a bit of whiskey drunk and things as well. Yes. But it's on a Monday night. So it's always a good industry event. You know, it's a real honour to be become a Keeper of the Quaigh.
When you were made Keeper of the Quaigh, Gordon, do you remember some fellow inductees that night?
Oh, it's a good question. Who was inducted on the same night as me? There was a few people that I knew.
Okay.
I can't actually remember now, though, but it was quite a long time ago. I think I was 11 years ago in October. So,
wow.
And having been described recently in an article as a veteran, I'm beginning to feel like it, which is annoying.
Yeah. Well, you can have a think of that. Some of the pictures come out of it. We've got a lovely brand director at Ian McLeod called Karen Walker. And some of her photographs featured the writer of Outlander, Diane Gabaldon.
That's right.
He was there this month, and one of Karen's friends had, I think, the first book and got her to sign it that night. How nice was that?
No, fabulous. And I just had a thought. A very good friend of mine, Annabelle Meikle, runs it. She's the lady who pulls it all together. We should get her on.
Oh, I would love that.
We will get Annabelle on. I will speak to Annabelle.
Speaking of getting on, you'll see it if you've come to the podcast, because it'll be on the title there, but we've got a lovely continuity from last episode. We talked about labels and whiskey and Inch Dearney putting the word Fife on the label.
Yep.
I've got Ian Palmer coming up, who owns and runs Inch Dearney, talking about that, about putting his distillery together, and also a very good discussion about how he would like to put the word rye on a bottle, on a label of Scotch whiskey. So that's coming up, Gordon. We'll discuss.
Of course he would, because he produces a rye.
Correct. And then we have Roland Grain later on in the show. Roland, you may know, is the main investor in the new distillery. And we'd like to talk about new distilleries shortly with Rosebank at Ardgowan.
Ah.
Which is right next to Inverkip on
yes.
the west coast of Scotland. Roland's, I think, put in, and it's in the news, best part of £7+ million to this distillery. And I meet up with him in Vienna as well, where I've been in my last travel. So that's a fascinating interview about his whiskey. And if anybody's listening to this show that's been to a whiskey festival, or maybe does whiskey festivals, this one, Gordon, in Vienna, that Roland Grain organized, was only master classes. There was no standing behind a desk and pouring. So the people bought a ticket and they came to three or four master classes, and that was their day. And then in the afternoon or the evening, more people bought. So master class festival, one of the only ones we think there is around. Would you like that?
That sounds a different way of doing things.
Yes.
I quite like it, and no, it should be quite interesting to see how, you know, how, I mean, you were the one that was there. How does that change that dynamic? There's not that sort of room of stands which
That's right.
people wander around.
It was wonderful. I thought it really refreshing. And I was doing the Glengoyne Masterclass and a Tam Du, so it's two back to back, which was great actually. And people then moved around room to room and got a different masterclass each time, which was wonderful. Andy Bell, on the other hand, our friend from Arran, was doing Arran and Lag, and then Arran and Lag. He had four masterclasses back to back per session, which is quite heavy for him. So it was a great masterclass. Roland is a very clever man, and he's coming up later on in the show. Gordon, I talked about Ardgown there, but in the last couple of weeks, we've had quite a lot of press in the Whiskey magazine and all over the place about Rosebank. Come
We have.
on, this
We
is,
have.
we want to do a special, but please, you're all over it, Gordon. Tell us what's
Well,
happening.
not particularly. Well, I mean, look, it's we've finally been able to reveal what it looks like on the inside. We are ready to open. We have I had an update yesterday, which I thought was brilliant from the team, really just telling us all the effort that's gone into behind the scenes of getting everything going. Far less the distillery, the people, the shop. All the stuff that goes in the shop, unbelievable. And it's all taking shape. I had a look, was there yesterday briefly. And it's looking fabulous. And the pre-sales have been really good of the tickets. There's different ticket prices for everybody's budget. You know, starting at £25 to get a tour of a fabulous distillery with, you know, a little bit of new make and two fabulous drams from actually Glengoyne and Tamdhu, because we don't have any Rosebank at a price point that we can obviously pour that.
Can I stop you right there, Gordon? Did you say new make?
You can nose some new make on the opening tour. I think you get a little sniff of new makes, you get a little feel for Rosebank as it is currently, through that triple distillation and one tub condensers. But of course, we don't have any whiskey. There's
No.
no legal whiskey.
But you might be able to taste some in the shop, at least, or there is going to be some new make to be tasted.
Now you could buy some new make and take it
Yes.
home. You can do that.
Wow.
But also, you can. There's a whole load of other things you can enjoy. But our biggest problem, well, it's not a problem, but our only whiskey we have is from between 1989 and 1993, which you know, in a little bit of maths, means it's over 30 years old, which you know, in a very simple mathematical equation, does not equate to a £25 fabulous tour that you're going to get. So we need to pour other fabulous whiskies, which we have
Oh,
from Glengoyne and Tamdhu, our sister distilleries.
oh, so that is very exciting. Lots of distilleries opening up all over the place. And while, you know, we were at Rosebank a few weeks ago, speaking to Malcolm Rennie, I thought, Malcolm,
Oh,
you know,
reminds me, I need a
you've
Rennie.
got some pedigree. I mean, maybe I mentioned this a little bit in the last episode, some pedigree of starting distilleries. You've got
He does. I feel there's a quiz
Culhwch.
coming on.
Yes, there is. Culhwch, Annandale, Rosebank and Lochlea. Lochlea then Rosebank. So that's my.
Yes, yeah,
I thought,
absolutely.
we've talked about this before, and you've done a flight of whiskey, Lowlands, Highlands, or you can do smoky, non-smoky. What about a Rennie flight?
A Rennie flight.
Yes.
Okay.
So a Malcolm Rennie flight. So you'd have a nice wee dram of Kilhoman, lovely dram of Annandale.
I'd have Machir Bay. That's my favorite Kilhoman.
See, there you go.
I'm not that familiar with Annandale's range of whiskies. And really, if I'm honest, Lochlea's. I need to sit down with John Campbell at Lochlea and go, right, John, talk me through this.
Yes, they're just a new
But I know that they've got a sort of grain to bottle story. They've got quite a lot of releases already. I haven't drunk enough Loch Lee to comment on a Loch Lee, but
Well, Gordon, I'm
I
only
know
doing.
Malcolm also used to work at Ardbeg.
Yes, because you've got an Ardbeg in there. It's just this could be a little running feature that I may start doing flights not based upon flavour or geography, but about people.
Ah, okay.
Ah.
So you could do a flight for, well, Robbie Hughes has worked at 28 distilleries.
Yes. Well, whose is this? This is a little, just to get us going. Whose flight would this be, Gordon? It's a hell of a lot
Okay.
of whiskies. Connected to Amrut Distillery, Annandale, Clydeside, the Cotswolds, he consulted on, Cavallan, Kilhoman, Lindores, Milk and Honey, Pindern, Macaloney, St. George. It's extraordinary, this man's
Yes.
consultation. Whose flight would that be?
Can't remember the Jim.
Yes, Dr. Jim.
Dr. Oh.
Dr. Jim Swan.
Yes.
Yes, I know. I know.
I met him in Taipei about, he died unfortunately about 3 or 4 years ago,
Yes,
roughly.
yes.
Probably met him about 6 or 7 years ago. Amazing man. Yeah, amazing man. He was also involved in the STR, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. Which is another,
STR casks.
which I've had a potential acronym part of the episode. That would be the acronym shaved, toasted, and recharred.
That's exactly what it means. Yeah.
Yeah.
DCHAR, rechar type thing.
So, Dr. Jim Swan.
Yes.
So,
Dr. Jim Swan.
could we look at future episodes, people in the industry, and do a flight from where they've
Oh,
worked?
there's thousands of people you could do
That's what
that with. Yeah.
thought that'd be quite nice. But what an amazing amount of distilleries, Dr. Jim
Oh,
was
look,
connected.
I think, you
Oh.
know, you look, if you ever wanted to, I mean, it's interesting if you wanted to start a whiskey distillery. Because, you know, nowadays it's actually relative. I say it's easy. It's not easy. I mean, for Seis, for example, who are our still makers, they actually can do the whole thing for you. They can basically ask you, what style do you want? And they've got setups for this style, setups for that style. This suits peated. This suits lowland. This suits. It's incredible. Now, where Jim, I think, brought in was the level slightly beyond that. The way of distillation, the temperatures, the way that you want to do it. Jim was amazing that way. And he was totally unique in this industry.
Yes, I remember going down to the Cotswolds. It's an episode, if you go back there, and me down there, and that was mentioned. There's a badge of honour that Jim Swan came down and helped him set all the
Yeah.
processes up. Just realise that's a badge of quality, and it's great whiskey as well. So
Oh, yeah.
there's magic in all these distilleries. So thought
For
that
sure.
was quite nice. Speaking of working your magic in the distillery, Gordon, we maybe want to have a listen to Ian Palmer of Inchdearney just to follow up from the last episode about putting words on labels.
No, absolutely. I'd love to hear from them because I'm a big. I bought a bottle of their rye,
Yeah.
and if I'm honest, I haven't had a chance to open it yet. The bottle was striking though,
Oh, that's.
but I've not opened it as yet. So, I'd love to hear more about it.
Well, this is from Vienna, and he very graciously gave me some time because it was a very busy masterclass schedule. So we'll have a wee chat about this. Take it away. This is Ian Dearney.
Bummer.
This is Ian
You.
Palmer of Inchdearney.
Yeah.
I'm here with a person who has been referenced on last episode's show. Sir, what's your name? Where'd you come from?
Ian Palmer, and I was born and brought up in the Highlands in Invergordon, but the Inchdearney Distillery is in Fife.
That's the subject of last episode, the word Fife.
Yes.
We weren't sure whether it was, obviously it was legal, but it's fair to say it's unusual to have a region that's not Highland or Speyside on a label.
It's unusual, but you will think about some of the whiskies that claim to be Orcadian. So there's a similarity with that. And I think that because Fife is legally defined within the local government laws, it has a definition. So we are a Fife distillery. We would encourage all the other distilleries in Fife to say so as well, because I think it's got a clear provenance and a clear definition.
And on that episode, we did say there was more distilleries in Fife than there was in Campbelltown at the moment.
Correct,
You've got quite a
yes.
region going on there.
There is, and I think that it's got, although it's a region that is not defined by its flavour, mm-hmm. it's defined very much by its location and its sort of attitude, I think, is the way to describe it, how it approaches its whisky making.
Ian, how did Inch Dearney come about? In the best will of the world, how did you manage to do it? Where did you come from? What? Could you give us a potted story for those that don't know?
A wee bit of a story. I've been making whisky for 46 years. So started off at Invergordon Distillers, then into White & Mackay, and then into the Glen Turner. And while at Glen Turner, I just decided to start my own business. And I spent a good number of years building a business before I built the distillery. So by building the business, I had it all, everything lined up. And then found the location at Inch Dearney in Fife, and went ahead and built the distillery.
It sounds easy to say, Ian. That was so easy in a couple of sentences. It sounds like anyone can do it, but that must have been quite tricky.
It's difficult. It's difficult.
What was the main, looking back?
I think that the main issue is understanding that you're starting from new, and in the Scotch whisky industry, before you can actually begin to think about making profit, it's a long way away. Mm-hmm. And that is the major barrier.
Yeah.
The major barrier is getting not the capital funding to build the distillery. That's dead easy. It's getting the funding to keep you going, and to keep you going and avoiding the trap of releasing a single malt that's way too young.
And that's something that a lot of people have to avoid.
Yes.
I'd imagine there's more come online.
Yes, I think that you have to make sure that what you do is when you release your first one, it's the best possible one. And yes, I appreciate that age isn't absolutely everything, but it is something. It is part of the story and it is part of the package. And I think that in order to get a brand that stands the test of time, it's got to have an age statement when it comes to the single malt market.
Yeah, and you've also been quite well known for some innovation within the production process.
I think what we wanted to do was between starting and delivering the 12-year-old single malt, we wanted to be releasing different things to build the brand, to build the Inch Dearney brand. And the Inch Dearney brand has got nothing to offer other than flavour. So what we wanted to do was to create a distillery that by pulling different levers would create different flavours. And the equipment we put into the distillery allows us to do that. It's very difficult to do some of the things that we do in your traditional distillery because the equipment is not lined up to make it.
Yes, and give us a couple of examples of those levers.
So particularly in terms of our mashing process, because we can use cereals that have got a much higher viscosity. The rye is the worst case example. Mm-hmm. So we've got the hammer mill, not the roller mill. We have a mash conversion vessel, which only converts the starch into sugar. And we've got a mash filter that only separates the wort from the draff. So what we've done is we've broken down the process into separate discrete elements mm-hmm. that allow us to do different things. For example, in the mash conversion vessel, we can mash in at 40 and then do a protease step and then raise the temperature up to 63 and then take the temperature up to 68 without the addition of water and then pump that into the mash filter. And then we would sparge only in the mash filter. So that's a good example of mm-hmm. how we can use different cereals. We have a Lomond still. That's our version of the Lomond still. So we call it the Lomond Hill still, because the distillery is to the south side of the Lomond Hills. That is a pot still. It's a batch still.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spirit still. But it's got a series of bubble cap trays in the neck of the still. And that allows us to work with the different reflux ratios in the spirit still.
So you can make it more or less.
Yes. Yeah.
Easier for the spirit to go over. Oh, fascinating. And yeah, you mentioned about cereals. You've got a t-shirt on right now. Yeah. We had a chat about rye mm-hmm. last week or last episode. Would you like to see a change in the legislation when you can maybe have rye and still call it a Scotch?
Yes. I think there is a number of things in play here. In Scotland, and only in Scotland, We cannot call a rye whiskey a rye whiskey. Every other country, the Americans, the English, the Europeans, can all make a rye whiskey.
Yeah.
And they can call it a rye whiskey, and they can put it on the shelf in Scotland. A distillery in Scotland cannot do that. We have to call it a grain whiskey. The flavour profile is completely different. So actually, by putting grain whiskey on the label, which you have to do by law, is actually misrepresenting the product. It is misleading the consumer, which is the most important thing in the entire world. Mm-hmm. It's misleading the consumer to think he's buying a grain whiskey. He's not. He's buying a rye whiskey. And I think that is the key point. I think that particularly if other distilleries can do it, why can a Scottish distillery not do exactly the same? No different.
That's a great question. And the people at this whiskey convention, they would want to know.
They are desperate to know. Yeah. Yes, it makes it clearer for them to know what they are buying. And if we start to deliberately mislead the consumer, then that's a dangerous path. I'm fully supportive of the categories, and I understand why categories were created. They were created to ensure that the contents of the bottle was what was said on the label. We've got ourselves into a position now where the contents of the bottle is not what is said on the label, and I think we need to change that now.
People are drilling down into those different categories of yeast. I'm drilling down into the grains. I'm drilling down, and I understand it's a very good debate.
Yes.
Point
there
just now. You're on in a few minutes. Just a word about this festival. What have you made of Vienna Potstill Whiskey Festival?
It's a very different format. It's a format targeted at the people who were really interested in the detail of the product. It's very intimate. You've got groups of no more than 10, so you've got a good way of interacting, and equally they can interact directly with the people. I think it is a very, very good format.
Yeah.
It's
format. And it'd be remiss of me to not just to talk whiskey. This is called Whiskey Unscripted. What whiskies are you serving today, and maybe any teas for down the line?
Yes. So at the moment we're pouring the Rylaw. We're talking about the Rylaw, we're talking about the potential for an aged Rylaw in a different oak, but we're also talking now about next year's brand that we're bringing out, and that is the King Glassy, and that is our peated malt.
Oh, yeah. Is that the first thing?
It's the first one. So Rylaw is the first, and this one is the next one coming along, the King Glassy, which will be the peated malt, but it's been double matured, not finished. Double matured, so it's spent time 4 years in ex-bourbon wood, and then 4 years by the time it's ready for bottling in Amontillado.
So yeah, that's another discussion. When is a finish not a finish, and it's a double maturation?
In my head, a finish is more than 2 months but less than 12 months, and double maturation is years in different wood.
That sounds... I'm taking it from you, 47 years in the business, I'm taking it. That's, Ian, thank you so much for joining us in Whiskey Unscripted, and good luck with the last.
Great.
Just think of me when I'm in that bar in downtown Vienna, I've finished. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
He said, as you heard, if you're an English distiller, American or European, you can put the word rye on the label.
Yeah.
For people that say whiskey. In Scotland, he can't do that. And
so, I mean, look, I don't necessarily... I don't disagree with him. I think we need a shake-up of the rules of Scotch whisky. Not particularly a shake-up of the rules, but namings and things like that. I have a real issue with, you know, I've said this before on this podcast. I wish single malts were called single malts, and blend and malts that are blended together was called malts. So you have a malt whisky, and you have a single malt whisky.
Yeah.
And then you have a grain whiskey, you have single grain whiskies, you could have rye whiskey if it's 100% rye, if not, it's grain. You know, there's a whole range of different things you can do, but...
He talks a lot of sense as well, and I don't know if you caught the part there he was mentioning about finishing. Finish for him, something less than 12 months, if it's... He's doing a double maturation, so 2 years in each cask. So it's an interesting one, which brought me to Ask Dundas, which I tried to put a title called Dundask. And I've got a question sent in from...
Who's that was sent in from?
I can't quite remember the name. Is cask finishing a fad that is on the way out? Ask Dundas. Dundask.
No.
No.
It's not a fad. I mean, I think the first company that went on for it pretty big in the 2000s was Glenmorangie. I think you've got to ask your reason why you're doing it. Why are you finishing? You know, if you're putting good whiskey into a cask to finish it to, you know, work through that flavor, then that's fine. It's definitely not a fad. It has an absolute point of what you're trying to achieve. Look at Smokehead, for example, the whiskey we do. Four of the products are finished. Why would you finish in a tequila cask? You know, because you want to have a little bit of that influence of you know, a little bit of that influence of that tequila, a little bit of influence of the oak of that cask. So I don't think it's a fad at all. And we do it at Glengoyne. We don't do it at Tamdu, and we won't be doing it at Rosebank, but we do it a little bit here and there across our industry. There's a lot more people do it as well, but it's not a fad. A lot of people do it. It's a legitimate way of making great whiskey. Where I don't agree with it is when you're using it to try and enhance average whiskey.
Yeah, yeah. And is there any rules around finishing? We're touched in this.
No, there is no rules around finishing, which is, you know, there's a lot of confusing labeling out there. And there's a lot of confusing things. People might say double cask. If you said to me a double cask, I would think that would go from one cask into another, which is technically finishing. But actually, double cask can just be two casks married together, two different cask types married together. You know, Tamdu, if we look at Tamdu 12, 15, or 18 are all double casks. They're all American and European oak married together. We just don't choose to use that term.
But
we
you
don't
could if you
to.
Wanted to, people, yeah.
You could do. Anything that's married together is a double cask, you know, or it could be triple cask if it's three different types of casks. So, you know, it's a little, finishing is, I think I said this before. I remember seeing one whiskey that was 9 years in bourbon and 30 years in Fino sherry. And that's a Fino finish. You wouldn't call that a Fino finish, though.
It's just a double maturation, or however you describe
it. I don't know what the heck I would call that if I think about it. I would just call it... Would you call it a Fino cask? You can't call it a Fino cask because it started off in bourbon casks. So I think it was just a 39-year... It was a 39-year-old... Can't remember what whiskey it was. Finished in... I think they did say it was finished in Fino casks.
Wow.
But yeah, it's just, you know, there is no rules to it. But, you know, for me, finishing is, there's some good examples of finishing in a standard range across the industry. But, you know, it can be 6 months. It can be 6 years. It can be 60 years in theory. But, you know, for me, what I think it should be is the finishing period should be less than the initial maturation.
Yes, that's how I would
interpret
it. But it doesn't need to be.
No, it doesn't need to
be. According to Ian there, it had to be, for him, it's under 12 months. That's a finish. It's just
yes, but I mean, that depends what you're trying to achieve, though, to be fair. You know, for example, if you move a whiskey, if you move an old whiskey from a first fill sherry cask into a, you know, a refill or a second or third fill cask, you're moving it into a different cask. You're doing it for a reason. The reason you're doing it is maybe you've got a lot of good maturation and you don't want any more, and you're trying to then age it further without too much of that cask maturation. Mm-hmm. So you're not overpowering the cask. That's not a finish. So you're not finishing it, really. You're just moving it into another cask. That happens with a lot of old whiskies.
Yeah.
Most of our smokeheads that we do, I would fit into what Ian was saying, because they are about no more than about 12 months. But that's not always the case. You've got a core range Beaumont that's finished it for 3 years in a sherry cask. And they really used to highlight how important that was to that product, the 15-year-old darkest. It was all about the dark finish in sherry. So look, I take his point. It depends what you're trying to achieve with your finishing. If you're trying to get a little bit of what was in the cask before, sherry, rum, tequila, then shorter finishes are always going to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to get more influence from the oak in that cask in relation to what you have in it initially, you're going to need longer.
It's fascinating.
It's totally fascinating.
It's the world of finishing. I'd love to hear some people's opinions on it. It's lovely if this is a live radio show. We take calls now to find out your best whiskies. Do you believe a finish enhances or can it sometimes subtract? Would you like to have... No, it's a huge area. It's wonderful. It's a rule. There's so many facts and figures, which leads me on to my next section, Gordon. And you have no idea what's coming. This may not last much more than a week, but are you ready for a fact fight?
Uh-huh.
There really should be some music for a fact fight. It's just some facts from the world of whiskey, and I need you to lift up one of their arms like a boxing match and say you've won. Fact fight. Gordon,
okay.
I have three facts in front of me. Fighting okay. out to see which one you will choose as your winner. Fact fight. Number one, Sinatra, as in Frank Sinatra, was buried with a bottle of Jack Daniels. Boom! Fact. Fact two. The average measure of whiskey contains just about 64 calories. That's less than a banana. Fact. Boom. Fact fight. And the last one. Diabetics' urine can be transformed into whiskey due to its high sugar content. Boom. Fact fight, Gordon. Which fact are you taking from those? The last one's left you stunned.
I don't believe the last one.
I got it from a journal.
Really?
Or the internet. Which fact's going to win the fight?
If I'm honest, I think, you know, we're all calorie conscious these days, but to know that if you're having a glass of whiskey, it's less calories than a banana, that makes you feel good about life.
Fantastic, Gordon. You're getting everything. We'll do one more fact fight and see if this can continue next week. One more. Gordon, 90s fact fight. Fact fight. 96% of the 16.5 million tons of malt made in the world goes to beer. Only 3%.
Yeah.
96% of 16.5 million.
I knew that.
Only 3% comes to Scotland or is made for whiskey.
That's unbelievable.
Fact one. Fact two, Ardbeg. You've mentioned it already. Ardbeg sent vials of whiskey to the International Space Station in 2011 to see the effects of space and whiskey.
Yep.
Fact two. Fact three, Strathyla, 1786, is the oldest continuously operating distillery. Three good facts here, Gordon. Oh.
That's an amazing stat, the last one. It's the only distillery that has been running for 237 years or something.
Yeah.
That wins.
Okay. That beats space and it beats the malt.
Yes, that's unbelievable fact.
Isn't it?
I didn't know that. Strathyla.
Strathyla. Because Glen Turret and I think Bowmore fight it out for the oldest distillery and with Little Mill as well. But that first fact is the question some people ask, well, will you run out of barley? Well, what happens if you run out of malt barley? Even this week in the UK, there's been stories from the UK farmers.
Yeah.
The amount of water on the fields, they cannot plant crops. And that
no.
will have an effect on UK barley. But when you see the 16.5 million tons of it made in the world, 96% goes to beer. Possibly, but there's quite a lot of malt barley out there in the world that could be diverted to whiskey if it came to it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a very good fact. I remember you, I know where you got that stat from while you were researching section on barley.
The Maltsters Association of Great Britain, MAGB. It's a website not to be sniffed at. Gordon, before we move on, I want to go to Rolling Grain, but I just think, we record this in April. April in Scotland, traditionally, and I like my history, has been quite an important one for Scotland. And here's a historical fact corner. Did you know, Gordon, in April 1804, the first recorded meteorite lands in Postle in Glasgow?
Really?
Yes, that's
unbelievable.
That is an April fact. And on the 16th of April, 1746, the Battle of Culloden. Now, the meteorite,
really?
Not much to do with whiskey, but the Battle of Culloden, you could say that the Jacobites that rebels, you did not pay the tax. They were great whiskey makers and consumers as well. You did not pay the tax if you were a Jacobite.
Was Culloden Bonnie Prince Charlie?
Yes, that's right. Which saw him escape to the Isle of Skye to go back to France with a great song written a number of years later, the Skye Boat Song, that Outlander has as the title track to their song, that Sinead O'Connor is now singing posthumously on the new Outlander series.
I got my Skye songs mixed up there. I was going to go... Songs.
So, Scott, there's a wee bit of historical fact corner.
That's very interesting. I've forgotten to ask Gordon. Well, we're three quarters of the way through the podcast. What are you drinking?
Oh my God, what are we drinking? Well, I'm looking at... I've got one right here, Gordon. And given to me by a good friend. I've got a Loch Lomond 12. Bumped into a good friend, David Lind, of Loch Lomond.
Ah, David, yes.
And he was talking about they're releasing the 25. So
nice.
I don't have that on me, but I've got a nice Loch Lomond 12.
Very nice.
What about yourself?
Well, I've got a bottle. I've got a couple, actually. I'll tell you the one I'm drinking at the moment. I'm drinking a Dalby Alley.
Oh.
And I'm drinking Dalby Alley number 3. So this came out about 4 years ago. This is 60.7% alcohol. One of my favourites of them all.
This is a Tamdu.
Tamdu, Dalby Alley. We're about to launch number 7, I think, this year for the Spirit of Speyside, which will be coming up in about 3 weeks' time, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
So we hope to see some of you there. Gordon and I will be up there. But this is Dalby Alley number 3. The reason I like this one, it seems to have that mellowness as well as the richness. Some of them hugely intense. I loved one. But this is the third one, all first fill sherry. Beautiful whiskey. If you can lay your hands on it, there's only 1,000 of them each time. It's a fabulous dram. And it's for those who know Glengoyne Tamdu, this is our teapot dram at Tamdu. This is the same sort of product, and hugely popular, goes very, very quickly. But I also just want to mention a good friend of mine, Heiko. Heiko, if you're listening, he delivered this to me. I met up with him about a month ago in Glasgow, and he brought me a Tamdu 41-year-old.
Hello.
From a Gordon and MacPhail cask. It's a refill hogshead, 158 bottles, 55.2% alcohol. He gave it to me about a month ago. I've not had time to sit down and drink it, but I'm going to try it later, and I will report back, because that's a special dram. So I want to just say thank you to Heiko for that dram, and we'll see him for his birthday in July.
Made under the previous owners. Of course, it wasn't Ian McLeod.
Yes, no, absolutely, yeah.
Highland Distillers. Gordon,
absolutely.
We can just have a quick listen to Roland Grain, very interesting, about the last festival, why he did it, and his shop in the middle of Vienna, the Potstill shop, which has been refurbished, and it's a new shop, actually, and also his investment and interest in Ardgown Distillery, a new one opening up next year, might even be the end of this year. So have a listen. I think you'll find this quite interesting, Gordon. This is Roland Grain.
Hi, I'm Roland Grain. Owner of Potstill here in Austria, here at our event, Potstill X Distillers.
This is wonderful. And just tell us exactly where we are, what city, and could you describe the venue?
Yeah. We are here in Vienna, in the Hotel Wimberger. We have here a beautiful hotel with a lot of classes, master classes. We have over 20 distilleries coming from Scotland, which educates our people here about drinking whiskey and enjoying it, yeah.
And this is not your average whiskey festival. This is what really intrigued me when I was asked to go across. Could you explain your thinking about putting this festival on? And I think you told me last night, no one's doing this.
Yeah, as far as I know, nobody is doing this. We have only masterclasses. There's no possibility for the people to run around and to shop around at different stands. So you're booked on 4 classes, There's a 15-minute break. Then we have the next 45 minutes of a masterclass. Very intimate, just 10 people, nothing more. You speak with the guy from the distillery. You can ask everything what you want to ask. Most of them get then a new fan base here in Austria. So it's a very good thing for lesser known distilleries, for example, or for distilleries interested to really interact with their customers.
And you had a lovely, which I thought was a great idea, some interviews with all the distillery representatives before the whole event.
At the start of the event and in the breaks on stage, Bernhard Rems from Whiskey Experts was running interviews with everybody coming here. So everybody has his 15 minutes of honor.
Of infamy or fame.
Of fame. And this was very interesting for me too, what the people told us. Yeah, it's not just about the product. So they told stories about the distillery, and they told upcoming stories about upcoming products, things in Scotland. Really, and I must really say, I've learned from a guy called Gordon Dallas how funny Glasgow can be. And he was a great showman here.
I have
no idea.
I've heard he's a really nice chap, but I don't know who he is. But that was the beauty of this, was being able to have a stage to talk to people and then have a intimate conversational masterclass, and we're not standing behind tables pouring whiskey for 10 hours.
I'm a whiskey fan myself, and I hate these fairs where the queues are on the stands, somebody is pouring out, and another hand is coming in just to get something to drink. The guy giving you the drink is telling you in 30 seconds what he's telling the next one in 30 seconds again. Everybody gets completely weird over the event.
Yeah.
So this is intimate, high quality, high end, creating fans for your brand.
I thought this really. I really hope. And this was the first one.
It was the first one. Of course, we had some logistic hiccups, and we didn't know how many people to appear or not, and all that stuff. But we have been fully booked out, and yeah.
I think it's been wonderful. Yep. You said it was a Potstill Whiskey Festival. What's the Potstill?
The Potstill is the oldest pure whiskey shop in Austria. We have currently over 2,000 different whiskies on the shelf.
2,000?
2,000, yeah. So we are the largest, by far the largest whiskey importer into Austria of quality whiskey. So we cannot mess up with Diageo and others. But we have currently about 25 companies we are importing from Scotland, and we try to grow this number to be the number one for all independents forever here in Austria.
Wow, and you're moving into new premises, I believe. Sorry, I never made it on Friday, the way the flights were, so I'd love to have seen the new shop.
Yes, we go into a new shop at Währinger Straße 65, which is beside the Vienna People's Opera House, Volksoper. And it will be really the whiskey embassy in Austria, because we have 400 square meters. We will have two possibilities for a tasting in the shop.
And that's quite a statement for whiskey in Austria.
It is. It should. I believe a little bit that the business is going more in that direction, like the IT business already moved, where the companies then were forced to open brand homes everywhere. And so I see us as a brand home for the independents, where everybody who is an independent distiller can come and say, okay, we want to showcase our products here. Do you help us? Because it's so hard to get shelf space in a supermarket or somewhere else. We want to have the possibility for our customers that they can see and taste all the products we have, and not just the one SKU in Tesco's or Sainsbury's.
And you try and taste in Tesco's, you get... Put in prison, back in a police car, so you can taste. And now you mentioned about brand home.
Yeah.
Now you have got a very exciting project.
Yes, it is.
In Scotland.
Could
you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, we are breaking ground, or we have already the steel skeleton now on site at Atgoen. Atgoen is a new distillery I'm currently constructing there. We will have a 1 million liter capacity. And it will be the truly first CO2 negative distillery, because we take the CO2 from the fermentation and mix it with green hydrogen and put it back to the grid. So therefore we get CO2 credits. And additional, we will heat up as soon as Scottish Power is ready, our stills with green hydrogen too.
And the difference between green hydrogen and hydrogen?
The green hydrogen is produced from green energy. That means windmills and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Therefore, nothing from the oil industry is needed anymore.
So Argowan is Inverkip. So you're quite close to...
To Glasgow.
To Glasgow and we to the River
get,
Clyde.
It looks like we get an own train station. Yeah. So there's the saying that on the former area of the IBM factory there, Silicon Glen, there is a train station, and it looks like it will be renamed Argowan, and it's a 10-15 minutes walk from there to the distillery. So enough after the tasting to get.
So on this podcast, we've had Ian, who started up Inch Dearney.
Yeah.
What's been some of the headaches? How do you build a distillery? That's my question.
Yeah, the headaches are tremendous every day, more or less, I can say. Planning is very complicated. Construction is very complicated. The money stuff is also a never-ending story. Yeah, that's a nightmare when you create a new distillery. So investors are welcome. Just call us.
Yeah. Austrian architects.
Austrian architects, yeah. We have a real cathedral. So when the steelworker were putting it up, they said, oh, you must put a cross on it, then it's a cathedral. And that was the thing. Yeah. So it's a 120-meter long production hall, which has a double curvature roof, which was so complicated to construct that we need only for the roof 4,000 individual parts to make it possible.
4,000 parts?
Yeah, 4,000 laser cut parts, and only for the roof. It's overall we had 14,000 individual parts due to this design. Yeah, so a nightmare for everybody. Yeah.
And when's the potential cutting of the ribbon? We do that in UK, you cut the ribbon, you open the doors.
Yeah.
When could that happen?
First whiskey is planned for December 24. So we are still on track for that. Yeah. So we will see if this really happens or not. You know, delays are common and normal. Cutting the ribbon will move back to June, I guess, to be very sure. But we will be in production Q1 25. That's for sure.
That's really exciting. I was not expecting to hear that when I first arrived on Friday. And you've got the team in place, or are you?
Yes, we have an outstanding team in place. Yeah, we have Max McFerrin, who was lead whisky maker for Edrington, who is making all our releases and all that stuff. And he's really great taste-wise. We have Ian McMillan, who is helping us designing the equipment and all that stuff. We have David Keir, former sales manager of Glenelachy, who is really excellent at his work, I must say. He's really a great guy. And we have a lot of technical staff who helped us to have the most energy efficient distillery in Scotland. So we are fighting against Ian Bormer because he's also very tough on that. Yeah. So we will see who is lower on consumption.
That's a great episode there, great episode. Well, listen, next time you're in Scotland, you said you maybe look me up. We might go for a small dram.
Yeah,
and
we meet at the pot still then in Glasgow, not in Vienna.
Of course. Well, Roland, good luck with that project, and we will maybe see again here next year.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I've met Roland.
Ah, what do you make of that, Gordon?
Very interesting. Very interesting. I mean, it's great to see his investment, his interest. He's been involved in sort of stuff before. And he clearly loves his whiskey.
He does. A very interesting way of putting on a festival. There's lots of them out there, but I don't think there's any like that one. So again, unique. And just talking of his architectural structure of this distillery, that vision with the elliptical roof, they're calling it a cathedral of whiskey. It's going to be pretty special. And again, to bring it back to Rosebank as well, I just think certain architects and builders have just got the hang of this. They're just building some extraordinarily amazing spaces that fits the functionality as well as capturing the essence of a distillery. Amazing.
Totally. Totally. Absolutely right. They're really interesting. And he's a really interesting character, I have to say.
Gordon, we're almost at the ends of our episode. Here we go.
Unbelievable. How did that happen?
We've got so much to do. We'd love to do a Rosebank special.
Yes, so I think there's a couple of things we'll try and do in the next couple of episodes. I think we'll try and be at the Spirit of Speyside, and we'll be catching up with some Spirit of Speyside legends at a few of the events there. With our Gordon will bring along his antiquated 1990s recording device, forgetting that you can use an iPhone. And we'll record some people live from the Spirit of Speyside Whiskey Festival. There's events going on. I'm also working, the other thing, just with our fellow podcasters on the Thursday night of Spirit of Speyside, which is the whatever date that is. It's the 2nd of May. On Not Another Podcast, I think we're doing Not Another Whiskey Podcast with Mitch and Nick Polacki. We are doing a live event, the Battle of the Ambassadors.
Your trusty iPod and try and get a little recording of that as well.
Oh, no, I'll definitely be along there making sure that we can steal some of their content for us.
Yes, that's what we need to do. Steal some of the content. So we're going to do a Speyside special, and also we'll get hopefully into Rosebank and speak to all the...
Yeah, I think we've got some opening events at Rosebank. So I think we'll be not broadcasting live, but we will be there at the events as well, speaking to the great and the good that come to the opening events in early June. Few other things that have been happening. I've noticed Port Ellen obviously's opening. I was on Islay about 3 weeks ago, and I stopped by Port Ellen, and it was like looking pretty good. Still a few things to do, but looking pretty good. And I was on site at our new distillery with the Islay boys, Laggan Bay. That's coming on pretty quickly. That's good to hear.
And that's not just a distillery;
it's a brewery as well. So there's a brewery and a distillery.
That's
it's almost heaven, isn't it?
That's almost heavenly. On Islay. What?
I know. Perfect. And it's right opposite the airport. So you can actually walk from the airport to the brewery.
And
the distillery.
All fours on the way back across the road.
Yeah. And then you could effectively fly in, walk across the road, have a great day, fly out.
Oh, that's going
to
happen.
I mean, why do you need to go and see any of the other really old distilleries on Islay? You don't need to go and see any of them.
Oh, that's brilliant, Gordon.
So that's very exciting. Yeah, just generally, you know, the industry, I think things are busy. People are working hard. It's good to be coming out of a long winter. Although the weather's still, I think technically the word is rubbish here.
Yes, the UK's not having it. Well, Scotland, certainly not. I can see my washing out on the line, so this is a podcast special that's wet and my duvet cover is soaking.
Oh dear, that's not good. But thank you very much, Mr. Dallas.
Yes, enjoy that Tamdhu 41 and I'll get tucked into some of this Loch Lomond. All the best, Gordon!
Bye-bye.
On the whiskey trail, coasting ahead. On the whiskey trail.